We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Bucks won a f***ing NBA championship.
Yeah!
What? What?
He tries to take a pulse, babe.
Watching that basketball game, like, caused health problems for me.
Boogie hates racism and Chris Paul. And who cannot get on board with that platform?
If I've learned a lot, this, I'm not going to say it. That sounds too
bad.
No.
The Bucks do win it all. Pat Connaughton's numbers should be in the rafters.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network Game 4 post-game. A little bit less of a fun one than the Game 3 post-game as the Milwaukee Bucks completely blew it and lost 116-108 to the Boston Celtics in Milwaukee. The Celtics tie up the series 2-2 and snatch back home court. Three games left, two in Boston. The Bucks will need to win there again. I am Ty Windisch, one of the hosts of the Eurostep. I am joined by the perseverant. No, I tried this one before and got it wrong before. The great Adam McGee of the Win and Six podcast.
Perseverant is fine.
Is that a word?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm rattled, Adam. How's it going?
It's going okay. It's definitely being better, but it's going okay.
So, I mean, there's a lot of places to start. I just want to say quickly, I mean, Giannis, I thought, was great tonight, especially in the third quarter, but really throughout. But Giannis is not enough by himself, and we've learned this lesson with the Bucks before. This is not news to us, but he can have 34 points on 32 shots, 18 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 turnovers, and it can still not be enough for the Milwaukee Bucks as, you know, what a 10-point lead, 11-point lead, I think, in the third, fourth quarter there for the Bucks. They had it. They had the whole game in control. They start the fourth quarter with Giannis, immediately lose the lead. And I think I just wanted to put the Giannis thing in there because I don't know how much we'll focus on positives, maybe toward the end. But you just can't survive a game like this from Jrue Holiday with Chris Middleton out of action. And I think that's what it came down to. I think Jrue got himself into a lot of looks that typically you like his chances of making. Some very ill-advised ones too, but also some good ones, and made almost none of them. And I think that's the difference. I think that's how you lose such a big lead. Your second best player in the game just unable to, you know, convert any sort of shots offensively.
Yeah, I mean, let's stick with Giannis first of all, because you brought it there. Still not his best game, like still not his best stuff in the third quarter. Absolutely, like that's the best version of Giannis. Plenty of the game where that wasn't what we were seeing from. Free throw shooting was bad. 5 points left there. The 3-point shooting and the shot selection on those was really bad too. I think in part there are possessions off for him in his mind where it's, you know, take a break. Except you only find yourself running back down court to play defense all the faster for taking those shots at the moment. So I don't know if that's the ideal way to go about getting Giannis some rest on possessions. I think moving the ball, finding some teammates could help there. But a lot of the common issues for the Bucks returned, even though they weren't there early. Early in the game, we were seeing really nice ball movement. We're seeing positive results from that. All got very static later on. Guys in the corners that are just unwilling to rotate out.
Or take a shot when they get the ball in the corner, which was the first half issue.
We'll get to that. And one player in particular,
it
literally became unplayable because of that in part. But for Giannis, like, you can't really ask for more. He can be better. I still think there is a game where he just completely dominates start to finish in this series. Because even for all the things the Celtics are doing, like, he's got control of a lot of it. He's able to go and do what he needs to do. He just needs some sort of help, not to take us off the rails with some cross Milwaukee sports comparisons here. But you know what this reminded me of, Ty?
This reminded me of watching Corbin Burns start.
Corbin Burns with the third worst run support in Major League Baseball. That's what it's like watching Giannis tonight. And some guys stepped up. Some guys who really, I guess you can't ask for more. It's actually much more than you could have expected that they've given you. But the core players for offense that you would have turned to with Chris out and said, okay, you three guys are like most important, or your three of the four most important players did not step up, did not deliver. And that just became too much to bear. And it becomes too much to bear because in the end, the Celtics get 30 from Jason Tatum, which is hard to believe. It's kind of a fake 30 points. It doesn't matter, though, when you get 30 from Al Horford as well.
God.
That's going to do it when the Bucks can't get steady contributions offensively from players who are among their best, among the players who are going to need to perform. And you mentioned Drew, so I'll bring it back into where you did set it up. Drew Holiday played 41 minutes. In the 7 minutes he was off the floor, the Bucks were plus 15.
It's a trend this whole series.
They lost the game by 8.
His plus minus has been terrible this series. And there's a lot of noise, but he was just off. 5 for 22, 1 for 6 from deep. Drew and Giannis wasted 10 possessions shooting threes and got 3 total points out of it, which just can't happen. If Giannis wants to take a possession off, give it to someone else to shoot a three. Like, I'd rather have a contested three from anyone else besides Drew than Giannis taking some of these threes. When you're 1 for 4, that's enough. I hate it. I don't like it. I get to a point every game where I'm just like, okay, I've seen enough of those. But back to Drew. 5 for 5 from free throws, surprisingly good for him. He did have 9 assists, 3 steals, 2 turnovers, but you need more points. You just need more. You cannot have a guy, you're going to lose a lot of games, and you don't have Chris. You get 0 points from Chris, we'll put it that way, and Drew is 5 for 22. It's just not sustainable. And I think the guys you mentioned, Wes Matthews, 3 for 4 from deep, Drew 3 free throws, hit all of them, more great defense, plus 7. And the Wes didn't play nearly enough, 28 minutes. He should have been well over 30. I know he's older, but that could have made a big difference in this game. Pat Connaughton logs 30 minutes, 4 for 8 from the field, 3 for 6 from deep, 7 rebounds. I thought he had a tremendous game, but I mean, Brooke was okay. Had some nice plays. Didn't
he gave you what you want from him offensively? I mean,
defensively was not ideal.
It's not, but then your other players available to you weren't giving you better options.
Yeah.
And you know you're putting Brooke out there on an island. You know that's not the ideal situation. It should be a matchup where Bobby is able to hang. Where all it takes is discipline, foot speed. And you say, okay, do what you've been doing all season and show that that's something you've got now. It's something you can be trusted to do. Wasn't there at all. And honestly, his offense was worse than his defense, which is just, there's no way you're playing Bobby Portis if his offense is way off the boil like it was. I think on the whole for Brooke, particularly with, he was the only guy in the fourth quarter that Giannis was gassed and someone was going to have to come and help Giannis anyway. So one, when the Bucks were hanging on for dear life after coughing up the lead in an 11-1 run kind of almost immediately, Brooke was the guy who was scoring some. And then even as they were in position to get back into it before it really got away from them, it tended to be Brooke who was getting to the rim, feeding off scraps. Like, the Bucks could do a better job of getting the ball to Brooke too. It's funny, there was that weird turnaround kind of half pass, half shot.
That was Drew a shot. Had. 100% a shot.
I thought the same.
No question.
But the thing with that is there was at least two triples Drew took in this game where the closeout was so aggressive that he could just pass over the top and Brook was completely wide open inside and you would have had more easy dunks. Like those kind of shots are there for Brook. If the Bucks are just a little bit more selective in what they're doing and they bide their time, make the passes when they come. But yeah, it's Drew, Grayson, and Bobby. And yeah, that's what it comes down to. 10 of 36 from those guys, 27 points. Like if Chris Middleton is in this series, we're probably expecting 27 points from Chris in a game like this. So when you don't have that, to then only get that kind of contribution from those three guys combined is just catastrophic. And Giannis, through sheer force of will, through sheer force of nature, managed to put the Bucks in a position where it looked like they were going to win this game, win it quite comfortably. But he really did look tired. And oh, yeah. It's the game where he was embracing the contact, fighting through it, and just relentlessly going inside as often as possible. It's the game we've seen the most of that in this series. And we know all the bodies the Celtics were throwing at him, and they were all racking up fouls. The Celtics fouled, like, for all of the crying that we've heard, probably will continue to hear, they fell relentlessly, like legitimate fouls. Like, forget any, like, kind of standout plays that fans are going to highlight one way or the other. The Celtics fouled and fouled and fouled and fouled and fouled. And you know what? In the end, it worked. There is incentive to do that against the Bucks, particularly against Giannis, because there's always a chance he's going to miss some free throws. But the other thing is, it clearly just in giving into the contact and in accepting that, and then also knowing, particularly on the road, a lot of those calls may go against you. You're going to pick up fouls, but Giannis is also going to feel that. It's going to wear him down more. It's going to be more and more exhausting. And by the end of the game, that's what happened. And this is what we feared without Chris is possible. What I've said from the start of this series is I think this is the Celtics series to win. As in, if Jason Tatum proves he's as good as everyone thinks he is, the Celtics should have the better players, should win the series under these circumstances with Chris out. I don't know if Jason Tatum actually did that tonight, but he found 30 points.
He had a great fourth quarter to his credit.
Great fourth quarter.
5 for 6. He put the Bucks away, played the whole quarter.
For sure. Some opportunism there, but hey, if you're going to show up and get some shots to go in and then find some points in just a variety of ways, including a couple of crazy shots.
The scoop quarter was crazy.
Scoop was ridiculous. Fourth quarter is a good time to do that. Also, the Bucks allowed him to do that because they got too fond of thinking George Hill can hang with Tatum. George Hill cannot hang with Tatum. That does not work. His eyes lit up every time he saw George Hill late in the game. A situation very similar to when Giannis sees Jaylen Brown on the other end. It's not the matchup. Wes Matthews has got to be the guy. You've got to go deeper in terms of Wes Matthews' minutes because George Hill, as good as he was until he wasn't very good, I thought, in this game, not a matchup for Tatum.
Like, I thought he was okay and did okay on Tatum. Everyone was really pissed. I don't know.
No, I think fourth quarter, it just fell apart.
And the game fell apart because no one could find Al Horford, who had 30 points.
But for as much as Horford did the damage in the fourth, as much as Horford did the damage throughout this game, throughout the previous game, really throughout the series at this point, the thing that has had the Bucks in position is Jason Tatum is not important. He's irrelevant. He's, up until this point, not being able to do what he needs to do for the Celtics to win games. George Hill was not able to stop him at all in the fourth quarter, and he was on him for long stretches. It got Tatum going, and from there it was game over. Like, the Al Horford thing,
it's inexcusable. It's totally inexcusable.
No, but it goes back to when we've always had corner tree stuff over the years. It's visceral, right? So it's the thing everyone is going to focus on. Well,
of course it is.
But they're not losing this game if that's all that's happening. If they don't allow Jason Tatum to take off. But they're right there in the game. They lose the game. The game goes away from them because of Jason Tatum. Well,
I think both things hurt, obviously.
Obviously,
Horford,
both things hurt.
Horford's the one that brought the... I think Horford gave the Celtics the lead. Tatum took it from there.
One of those things you can sustain in the series, and they have to this point. You can live with it. You can win while it happens. If Al Horford has 30 and Jason Tatum has 30, you're finished. Like, it's that simple.
Yeah, but the Horford one is more controllable. Horford, I mean, listen, obviously a great performance. A lot of those shots are just open.
But okay,
you can't do that when he's got that many points.
Why are the shots open?
Because they're falling apart defensively and losing him.
But also because their entire plan is on not allowing Jason Tatum to go and get 30 points.
Yes, it is. But I mean,
and then when they allow him to get 30 points, when the plan has been tailored around stopping him, and that's why Al Horford's getting those looks, that's where the problem lies.
But they don't have to be that mutually exclusive. You cannot totally leave Al Horford without giving Jason Tatum all the shots he wants.
I agree, and I think that's got to be the plan from now on. But that has not been the plan up until now.
It had to be the plan in the fourth quarter, though, is my point. You have to adjust.
I can't say overall that plan is flawed in terms of how the series has played out to this point. Because if you just continue to defend Jason Tatum, if Wes Matthews continues to be on Jason Tatum and do the job he did, Wes, once again, phenomenal. Like, absolutely phenomenal. And giving you offense, too. Like, giving you real contributions offensively.
Amazing Wes Matthews
No small feat considering the energy he's expending at his age in defending Tatum. But if you stick with that, I think you can contain Tatum. And I think the fourth quarter ends up very different in spite of what Al Horford's doing. And what Al Horford is doing is unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it's the best he's ever played in the playoffs. He looks so bouncy, light on his feet. Really, really impressive. Al Horford has been for a long time a great player. Wasn't the last couple of years, but him being Al Horford again and the Celtics finding out, oh, wait, he's not finished, has been crucial to what they've become as a team this year. So it's kind of fitting from their perspective that it's happening right now. But that cannot be. It's about Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
I disagree.
If you're the Bucks.
I disagree. Send help from anywhere else. Or don't send help and make Tatum beat Wes one-on-one. Maybe he does, he beat George.
How have they won the games in the series so far?
What?
How have they won the games in the series so far?
Well, it's a Jaylen Brown explosion and an Al Horford explosion. Oh, you mean how the Bucks win the game so far? Yeah. But game three is only close because Al Horford, again, goes off. And he starts going off. You need to adjust.
Yeah, I know that's why it's close, but they can win those games.
Barely.
They could have won this one.
Yeah, they could, but they didn't because Al Horford had a big fourth quarter, six for six in the fourth.
He really gets going in the third, too, and they're up 10, up 11. That's not the problem is when the two things come together, because as you rightly said, that's a point where the defense just has collapsed entirely.
Yeah. The other thing is, I think some of these are semi-transition. They just totally lose him in the corner. It's how can you possibly?
I mean, there's some decisions I think that need to be made. The decision you and I both wanted to make for this game, which was Pat Connaughton starting a lineup. I don't see how that doesn't happen for the next game because the difference in his performance level and Grayson Allen's and Bobby Portis's right now, it's night and day. Pat is really playing well, beyond anything else. He gives you more size. He gives you more strength. I would like to see more lineups, honestly, with him at the four. You're going to have to pick the right moments.
I agree.
That is particularly if Horford is going to continue to shoot like this and he's terrorizing, you want to focus on stopping all things. Pat at the four is going to be key to that. Giannis at center. Because right now, we're back to where we were in Brooklyn last year. Bobby looks unplayable.
Yeah, I agree on Pat. I even think putting him on Horford sometimes would not be a terrible idea. The only reason I don't like Giannis on Horford is because we know he wanders. Giannis on Horford is a way to give up these corner threes.
Yeah, Giannis is terrible at closing out, too.
He got dominated by Horford on a bad closeout. That dunk, I mean, he should have been with flagrant or whatever, dead ball tech, whatever it was. I mean, he got him with the elbow on the way down, but that was an incredible play from Horford for sure. I would just put Pat on him and say, listen, if the Celtics move is to post up Horford on Pat, fine. I'd rather have that than wide open corner threes and whatever else the Bucks are allowing.
But it's also, if Pat's out there, I think the instinct for the Celtics will be to go hunt him. And Pat hangs a lot better in those situations than teams expect. And yeah. I would back him. There's even a couple of possessions in this game where he ends up on Tatum, and I'm like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah.
One of them, for example, he comes up with the steal on the passing line. And it's like he can live with that better than you expect, because the biggest weakness with Pat is you don't want him charging out at someone where obviously he's going to bite the pump fake. You know, this is Pat's greatest defensive weakness. But if his feet are set and he's in guarding position, he's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he can hang better with most guys than I think, you know, someone like Tatum, maybe someone like the entire Celtics coaching staff may expect. So that for me is the thing looking ahead. Now, not that solves everything, because you're still, whether they're starting, whether they're on the bench, you're going to need stuff from Grayson and Bobby. Like, there's no other option. George Hill gave, I think overall he gave some solid minutes until it just completely fell off from defensively. But even before that, there was some good defense. And I think Hill can play a very positive role in the series still.
Yeah.
But I'm not expecting, just back from injury, and even with the way a lot of the season has been, where his age is at right now, that we're going to get a 15 or 18 point game like we were getting a couple of years ago from George Hill in the playoffs. Like, the role players' offensive explosion has to come from guys like Grayson Allen and Bobby Portis. And it's like, it's time to step up right now for both of them. Grayson, like, he hits a shot late in the game. His 3 of 7 doesn't look that bad, but I think it's generous in terms of what his reflection.
He was lost, you know, to his the impact world.
On the game.
He was terrible.
And Bobby not shooting open trees, which is not something that has just happened in this game. It's happened in the series. It even happened a little against the Bulls. And I'm just kind of baffled by it. I don't know why. At what point has he lost some confidence in pulling the trigger on those trees? That's your entire game. You're really good at it. But it's something that in the postseason he's been very hesitant to pull the trigger on. Just can't happen. Like, even him being 2 of 7 and only 0 of 1 from deep, one attempt from behind the 3-point line, the idea that, like, he gets an open tree, he catches, he pump fakes, the closeout comes, and then he's like, I'm going to try and back down Al Horford. Like, Bobby, Al is a big dude. Like, he's a big, strong guy. You're not going to back him down from the 3-point line easily. It's not your strong suit. He just needs to let fly. Needs to let fly on open 3-pointers. And ultimately, like, we look at a game, the Bucks lose by 8 points, and we talk about Horford, we talk about Tatum, but we're not really getting into the specifics. 14 to 37 from deep for the Celtics, 9 of 27 from deep for the Bucks. Like, the 27 almost concerns me more, because you're not giving yourself the kind of chance that the Bucks often would in these kind of games.
Again, important to note, 10 of those are Giannis and Drew. 17 actual shooting threes.
Drew had a terrible game, but Drew can make threes, and I don't want to write that off. He can't, and he's made plenty of big ones. Giannis right now, what's Giannis down to, like 13% from deep for the playoffs? It's unbelievably bad. If he wants to shoot one, he wants to shoot two. I don't have an issue with that. That's always kind of been the case, and we have seen there are games where he'll make a couple. There's no good reason for him to be shooting four. There's no good reason. It's two wasted possessions at minimum. In this occasion, it was 4 wasted possessions.
The counter on Drew is, I feel like half of his games he's a really good shooter, and half of his games he's terrible, but he'll just take the same volume nonetheless. Like, he doesn't seem to have a sense, or he just ignores it if the shot is there or not. He's at 34% this postseason. Still better than last postseason, as we know. You're right, he's hit some big threes, but he just didn't. I don't know. It just,
the one thing I appreciate about Drew, right? Because you're saying he'll take the same volume
good,
no matter
it's
what.
It's good that he won't stop. I know.
With Chris out, like, the Bucks have got to live and die by that. And right now, like, if we get more games like this, they're going to die by it. They're going to die by Drew wasn't good enough to hit the shots they needed. They didn't have Chris, and the Celtics win. But if that's what happens, so be it. What you can't have is him not taking shots. So Drew has not had two particularly good games by any stretch of the imagination, but I will tip my hat to him for attempting 52 shots right over the two games. Like, it's something that we've often got on Chris about over the years. It's like, take the shots, you know, you particularly in big games, we need you to take the shots. Part of that is actually taking some of the strain off Giannis. Is it a lot better if you're making more of them? For sure. Would it be nice to see better shot selection from him? 100%. But I do respect that he is recognizing his standing in the team and he's stepping up and taking the shots. Doesn't mean he can't get smarter. It certainly doesn't mean that he doesn't need to get smarter, because he does. It's going to be essential to the Bucks having a chance to get through to the conference finals. But it's also, it's not nothing that he's prepared to take them. And even in mapping out the rest of the series, as low as confidence might be on his offense at this point, the chances of the Bucks getting what they need in any of these games are increased by just the fact that he is not backing down. He is willing to take those shots. And I mean, overall, look, it could be something we just keep saying and we keep saying, and the series is over and we're still saying it. I thought it was going to be tonight, particularly early on when they started kind of moving the ball well. I was like, okay, they found something. This could really kind of build up momentum as we go quarter to quarter. I feel like they're going to have a good offensive game. I know this is a tough series for either team to do that in, but I really do feel like they're going to find something in one of these games. Now, you want to find at the right time. You want to make sure you win the game where that happens. To be fair to the Celtics won the game for them where that happened. Like, they wasted an Al Horford game last time, but they could not afford. Like, legitimately, if they lose this one, series is over. We wouldn't have been saying that. We'd be saying, oh no, you've got to close it out. Of course they would, but if the Bucks go up 3-1 here, I don't know if it would even go back to Milwaukee at that point. But that's the balance of it. That's playoff basketball. The Bucks allow them to get in. The Celtics fight through it. And as much as we're going to focus on the Bucks and I guess blame a Bucks collapse, which was certainly the root cause of it, Celtics showing that they're there to fight. As much as, you know, possession, would I describe their play as fighting or falling on the ground? That's a different discussion. There is real spirit. There's real grit to this team. You have to put them away. They're not going to do it themselves.
Yeah,
and that's an important lesson. If the Bucks didn't know that by now, you're going to need to know that for what's the best of three series without home court.
That's what's frustrating, though, because they learned that last game, and they learned the Horford thing last game. It's literally the same situation where the Bucks show that they can be the better team, strong third quarter, build a lead. All you got to do is coast. All you got, trade bucket for bucket, trade stop for stop, win by 0 points over the last 12 minutes. It's like, okay, we got this in the bag. And, you know, they win game three, of course. Was not a sure thing by any means. And then this time, just take the implosion to a next level and basically lose by double digits. I mean, nice little Rajon Tucker move at the basket makes it 8, but pretty much a 10-point game and, you know, comfortably over a couple minutes, not too many minutes, but a couple minutes. Grayson's 3 that makes the box score a liar came, knocked it down to 7 after it had been 10. You go, oh, maybe some life. And then Marcus Smart
he takes had two. Grayson had another wide open one the next possession, which if he makes that, like, it's still there for the Bucks to have a chance at it. I think he could have cut it to 3. I think it was a 6-point game, and Grayson had a wide open shot that he didn't make. And then, Smart goes down the other end, and that's game over.
Smart, but having the game that the Bucks needed Drew to have is just like a dreadful feeling. He did to Drew what Drew tried to do to him and just could not do twice to basically ice the game.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's brutal.
The books need Drew to more than what Smart did tonight, though.
Yeah, fair. But they need him to shoot more. I agree. But Smart having two more points on 10 less shots or whatever is pretty tough.
But the books need Drew to be in the Tatum Horford category.
Yeah.
Or at least that, you know, whoever does. I think the key thing for the books is going to be, because I think if you can cancel out the Celtics' top few guys, we know the advantage should swing the books' way as you get into the role players a little bit deeper down into rotation. As you get to the Peyton Pritchards, who Peyton Pritchard had 0 points. Derek White had a really big game, a game that I'm not sure he'll have again this series. He had 11 points. Like 11 points off the bench is all that's there for the Celtics. And that's without the Bucks getting a whole lot and would cancel out Rajon Tucker's garbage time.
Yeah, 20 points.
You're getting 20 points off the bench when we would be saying, you know, Bobby, we need a whole lot more from you. I think that's something where if the Celtics top two guys, like we see tonight, if they're going to have 60 points, okay, Giannis goes for 34. Drew, you've got to get 26.
Yeah.
And if Drew is not getting 26, well, then it's got to be Brooke. I actually don't think anyone else is capable in the books of stepping up to that kind of level. We've never seen them do it before. Even Bobby, like, not in a playoff setting. Can I ever think of Bobby getting up to that kind of heady territory?
We've seen Grayson do it against a fake team.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not expecting that from Grayson in this series. If that happens from Grayson, he's making like 7 threes. So I think maybe there's 7 threes out there for a Bucks player just because you think at some point someone's going to make some. But that to me would be the thing. It's like, okay, what's the high end of Celtics contributions? If the Bucks match them, they should win the game. If you lose that, you're putting yourself in trouble. And you say it's basically a 10-point game. You know, Giannis and Drew are outscored by 10 points to the two top scorers for the Celtics.
Yeah, I think the concern now is, let's say they make the lineup change just to make this next part easier to talk about. Pat starts, Grayson's off the bench. I mean, could they not lose a game where the bench has like 4 points? With the way Grayson and Bobby have played and their inconsistency? I mean, maybe not four, but less than 10. And four will probably come from George Hill doing George Hill stuff and his, you know, 18 minutes or whatever he'll get next game. Like, that's the concern now is, you know, maybe there's just nothing on the bench. You need those two guys to show up. I mean, Hill, people, we need to talk about Bud at some point. The Bud tweets were absolutely insufferable. I almost dropped an F-bomb and ruined the clean tag because I'm so fed up.
It's just what happens, though. Again, it's like
the fixation on Hill is driving me crazy.
I don't get that. I haven't got it all season, and I don't think George Hill had a great fourth quarter. But I'm also like, look at that. It's like, what are the options? People want Javon Carter in those minutes, because if Jason Tatum had his way with George Hill, like, give him an extra 3-inch advantage, and even more when you take wingspan into account, and it would have been even easier. Go on, finish your tile if you don't want to do Bud now.
It's just like I'm just worried about the bench. The bench. They just need more. I mean, it's that simple. Either like a Drew above.
I'm not worried about the bench. The Bucks bench has consistently, even tonight, like as we're saying, they get 20 points out of it.
Yeah, but how much of that was Pat, who now we're talking about being a starter?
But you will work. You can get 20 points out of your 3-4 guys. As you said, George Hill could just come before. Like, you're gonna get probably 6 to 8 from Grace, 6 to 8 from Bobby. You'll get in that kind of range. And particularly like tonight, now Time Lord will be back, but again, in terms of offense, that's not going to swing a whole lot. Tice, Pritchard, Derek White, you're going to outscore their bench. It's about what you're doing in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem that White scores as much as Grayson and Bobby in this game.
That's what, but that's again, it's a factor in why you lose. Like,
well, yeah, I don't think that's. I'm worried that's going
to
be there.
But I don't think it has to be a game 5 thing. Like, I don't think it has to be game 5, game 6, game 7. But yeah, sure, tonight that's definitely a factor in you losing.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just concerned that it could, just with the inconsistency we've seen from Grayson and Bobby. Like, it's. Well,
they don't lose the game because of something like that tonight, right? But what happens is, this game should have been a blowout. And I think in the third quarter, like 10, 11 points, that's a good lead. But it's not a lead where the game is, you know, where you can coast or where you can even lose control of it for a couple of minutes and you're right there. They lost control of it for about 90 seconds and it wasn't even their worst spell. And all of a sudden the lead's gone. And then if you have a really bad spell, well, the game's just going to get away from you entirely beyond what you can get back. It's exactly what happened. That comes down to where you're not getting anything from Grayson and what Derek White's doing. Like, that's where that factors in.
Andrew.
What was a 10-11 point game probably should have been closer to an 18-20 point game at that point, with how dominant Giannis was in the third, with just how the Celtics struggled to really get anything going even early. If you look at the first quarter was closer than it should have been. And that's kind of a trend. End of quarters, not something that I feel like the books finished out very well in this game.
No.
Even when they're starting quarters, like, it's funny, the third quarter issue seems to have gone in the playoffs.
Three straight third quarter wins now, yeah.
And it's they're fighting different spots to just not show up. ends of games, ends of quarters, which is not ideal. Maybe they should switch back to not coming out in third quarters and come out in the fourth. That's a possibly a better strategy. But well,
it felt the second quarter, the one we haven't talked about, was their chance to really, you do better in that quarter, then you can build that real lead through the third. And they were bad in the second quarter because the ball movement, the stuff that we've talked about and said is so important, that it worked first quarter. We saw it right away. I mean, again, the lead should have been more. Giannis is making some beautiful passes and Bobby Portis is, you know, doing the electric slide to 18 feet and throwing it off the back of the rim, or Grayson is missing. But the second quarter, they just stopped moving the ball. And I think that some of that is Drew playing more and just trying to do so much and accomplishing very little. But just in general, like they don't move the ball way too often.
That's down to, because we always say ball movement, and I always try to talk about
people,
players
movement.
Moving as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can't move the ball if it's Giannis or Drew, you know, at the top of the arc, and you've got two static guys in corners who are covered, and you may have Brook inside. You know, if you've easy kind of pickoffs for the Celtics on all of your passing options, the ball isn't going to move, and Drew's going to take a terrible shot, or maybe Giannis will take one of his trees, or you're just going to drive into traffic. And if you're not, one, going to produce a moment of magic because you're Giannis, or two, going to draw contact and get to the free throw line, it's basically a turnover possession. So it's in those kind of spots, like what I've always talked about with this when it happens with the Bucks, and it was a Bud staple with the Hawks. That's really just basic stuff. Like, it's the kind of thing that I would have thought, like, by osmosis would have been ingrained into this team from like Kyle Korver's time there. Just get guys to cycle through those spots, you know? Having a guy in the corner, having your quadrants, even if that's what you're focusing on, it's like there is nothing that is stopping you from, particularly when most of the time the Bucks have capable shooters out there at all spots. Like Brook again, like Brook 0-1 from deep. We're not seeing Brook outside of the paint get shots at all. And
his,
I know Brook
three
is,
was terrible.
I know, and I know he's a hit and miss shooter, but we also can't say that he can't make shots. I've been calling out for him in the corners for quite a long time.
Yeah.
That's a shot he's got. Don't be afraid to just cycle through those spots. Like, it's better than standing still. You're creating movement. You're creating the chance for the Celtics to have a defensive breakdown. Don't allow them to just settled in and be like, there's 12 seconds left on the shot clock here and we don't have to move. It's up to you to find a way through this. It's like, move them around.
Yeah.
Move them around. If you move, you've got guys like Pat, guys like Grayson, should have a guy like Bobby who, you know, on the move, catch and shoot should be an option where maybe you get a good 3-point look. Particularly Grayson, like that's a shot that Grayson is good at. Even one of the threes he did make comes from that kind of scenario. Pat is really good at that shot. Two of Pat's threes tonight come from that. Just don't be afraid to move in those situations. Even more so, I don't know if it's more important when Giannis is on the floor without Drew or when Drew is on the floor without Giannis. Because when Giannis is on the floor without Drew and if he's there and you're not doing anything to help him create space, you're taking his energy away from him for late in game on top of how you're impacting the possession at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you see them find pay dirt on these like empty corner DHOs to get Giannis on a Jalen. And I love when they attack from the baseline, it's so hard for Boston to stop him because it's so easy for him to see where the help is coming from. And then they just won't do it for like a quarter. And it's just like, why? What was the pivot that made you go away from this? And the thing with Drew, sometimes, you know, I agree it's on everyone on the court to move and make ball movement. Sometimes the shot is up before guys can really move. But it drives me crazy that so many of these Lopez possessions, almost all of his points came when he is moving toward the rim along with a ball handler. When they park him in the dunker spot, I just feel like it zaps their offense entirely. Like nothing gets done because the Boston bigs can just sit down there. And for all that Brook can do, like he's a good post player. Him in the post in traffic has been a disaster for the Bucks.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't move quickly enough.
He gets stripped pretty
every time
as well.
Yeah, it's just like you can't. So when he's there, he's not, unless he's catching a lob, he's just not accomplishing much. So I'd much rather either put him in the corner and move other guys around more or like screen and roll with him. Like he's been so good. He catches those lobs. He puts them in. He gets offensive rebounds that way. As is, he literally just stands there, gets boxed out, can't get to the rebound, and then has to jog up court like from the farthest away position possible. They just need to just place him better on offense. Like so many of these possessions where he's just there, like right out under the edge of the backboard, it just feels like you're getting zero out of him when you start possessions that way and he doesn't move.
And it's about decision making too, because Brook is a better post player than you looked tonight. You've got to go to Brook in the post when Giannis is off the floor. Because if Giannis is on the floor, you give the ball to Brook in the post, what can you rely on? You can rely on Grant Williams is down there. Al Horford is down there because they're there already, not worrying about Brook, but worrying about Giannis. So suddenly you give the ball to Brook. You've got big, strong guys who are there ready to battle with him physically. And you'll get a Marcus Smart, a Jason Tatum ready to come in and just swipe at the ball. And it's there because Brook is like 7'2". He holds the ball really low when he works his way through the post.
Yeah,
it's there for you. If Giannis isn't on the floor, you're not going to have that same mass of bodies there. And you may get him one-on-one with one of those guys, which is a very different proposition. So that comes down to just better decision-making, picking your moments. Like, if you want to go to Bud, you could draw up more in those scenarios. And you could basically come up with a better division of how you're going to Brook between who's on the floor and who's off the floor. And Bud can do that. Like, in terms of coaching, there is always ways that a coach can coach a better game, that the Bucks can be better offensively through their coaching. But it's always going to come down to the decisions the players are making within the flow of the game, too. And particularly, say, Drew tonight, the decisions are bad. And that's really, really difficult to overcome from a coaching perspective. But I'm past the point where I care, where I pay any attention to, where I get frustrated, because it's the narrative. It's been the narrative for years. It's been the narrative pre-books. It will continue to be the narrative all true Bud's time with the books, post the books if he's elsewhere. Like, everyone's decided it's on Bud. And to be a books player, that's probably pretty sweet, because I think it lets some of them off the hook.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's more of a half and half thing. I did not think it was a tremendous Bud game. I think there's some things he's done pretty well all series. The lack of more defined offense, especially in the only one of Giannis or Drew minutes, continues to be a struggle for a lot of these games. The other thing with the Brook thing is it's how you post him up. Like, instead of getting him like straight onto the basket in the paint, like, again, get him in a corner, not all the way in the corner, but on the baseline, I mean, and let him post from there where you don't have someone coming at him from every single angle. They just make it so hard for him. I mean, you get him right in the middle of the paint and this Celtics literally coming from any direction, plus usually more help in the paint when Giannis is out there. It's just like, you do a couple, like, work a little harder. You can get better shots in a game like this, pretty much every game in this series, maybe not game two. That's the difference. So there is all these little just frustrating things left on the table. Also, I thought Grayson played too much. I think he hit the three and then Bud was just like, well, he's just going to play now because Pat's wrist got banged up. I don't know if we've gotten any, if he's okay or what. I hope he's okay. But I think at that point,
it was
like
back of the game after that, right?
I thought he was. He didn't. He only played like 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, though.
Yeah, I feel like he was back in after that, so I assume so.
Yeah, I think he is. There's been no reports from anyone on it, so I assume he's good.
That was a push by Tatum that was essentially like bowling. Like,
yeah,
he pushed Wes into Pat, and they all end up on the ground, which plenty of plays like both sides like that in the second half where it's just like bodies everywhere.
It's crazy.
The one thing on Bud, I will say, the criticism that if you want to make it is there and it's valid, but it's not a simple one. It's not even a simple solution, which is to just say you've got to draw up more plays, you got to have more structure to the offense. And what I will say to that is, first of all, it's just not how the books have done it. It's not who the books are. It's not how they play. We know this. We know the whole philosophy is about empowering the players on the court, trusting them to make decisions, basically coming up with ideas of how you want to play and letting the players make choices to define what that looks like on the court. We know decisions from that can often be really bad. We know when it works, it's pretty near unstoppable. The issue with that right now is you don't have Chris Middleton. So your best shot maker is out, and that makes it more difficult to play without a set structure in place. So what do? You go into a really rigid structure, which the team isn't used to because Chris isn't there? I don't know. I honestly, I don't know if that is a solution, how well that would work, because it is not how the books are designed to play. And ultimately, that is a story of where they are and of these playoffs. And it speaks to just how great this team is, how great Giannis is, that everyone has obsessed over this Celtics team for like 3 months. Still, people are drooling every time they step on the floor. It's like the greatest team the world has ever seen, Ty. The Bucks should probably be 3-1 up. And as things are, they're all square without their second, third best player, depending what way.
I'm comfortable with second again.
I was about to say, his absence has probably bumped him up the spot that he didn't have when he went down injured.
That's right. Especially against Boston, maybe their first best player, quite honestly. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that's more of a middle ground. And this is, you know, a bigger conversation for another day. But looking at the way the last every playoff series ever has gone for the Bucks, maybe it would have been worth a wider ranging change to how they do offense. Again, doesn't have to scrap what they've done forever. Maybe just add a little bit more, as they say, seasoning to the offense, but just generally. Could
you know
what
I think the biggest key to doing that is? And it's the thing that, like, it's this, the seasoning thing's always there and so much of it always gets thrown out. I do think a crucial thing that the books would need to make a really kind of tangible shift to how they're working offensively, to the structure they put into their offense, would be to have a point guard who is better equipped to do that.
Yeah.
That's not Drew's game. And that's fine, because Drew gives the books a lot of great stuff. Let's like look past what he's given tonight. because we know like they don't have a championship without Drew Holiday. And in spite of a rocky playoffs last year too, they're not winning that championship. They're not coming through, particularly the finals, without Drew. That doesn't mean there isn't a way in future you could look to combat that in terms of where you spend your money, although what a hilarious statement to make given the book situation and given their willingness to do things. But the books more than anyone could probably do it like a really strong featured offensive guard off the bench. And the focus has always been defensive guards. and they've managed to get some pretty good ones. They've managed to have some hit and miss guards. I think last year it was clear the need for another offensive guard, and there wasn't really anyone there, but they end up with Jeff Teague. And the reason they went for a player like Jeff Teague was obvious. And that kind of still applies. You just want like prime Jeff Teague, not finished Jeff Teague.
Yeah, I almost think this could be a starter too, but it's just hard to find someone good enough to take the ball out of Drew and Chris's hands that much with the resources the Bucks have.
But you'd love to have George Hill of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's right now. You would really love to have that version of him.
Just with a non-torn in half neck.
Yeah, that too, for sure.
Drew has yet to shoot above 40% from the field this series. Has not hit 40% since game one. You know, whether he's a true point guard or not, it's going to have to be better than that. I mean, again, we can talk about adjustments and seasoning and everything else. Drew's the kind of player that got himself a bunch of solid looks. I mean, he's getting to the paint. He's getting to mid-range. He's got a ton. I will say for his threes, I know I scoffed it and called them, so don't even count him in threes. He took like almost all open. Like, I think they were all good looks. He just couldn't hit them. And that's the thing, the silly thing with the fixation on Bud. I mean, maybe not all, but I know at least a couple were like catch and shoot, corner threes, just bricks. Like, the coaching stuff doesn't matter if Drew's going to be 5 for 22.
And also, generally tonight, Bucks missed plenty of good looks. Like, when we look at their shooting and we look at what let them down, and when we talk about the guys who they need more from, like, you can't come at Bud and say that Bobby didn't have three really good wide open 3-point looks in the corners when Bobby decided to just not take any of them. Like, what does your coach do about that? It's an 8-point game. Like, that's the reality of it. It's like every one of those would be a big deal. Something that at the time, it always felt like it was a game that could, no matter, it was there for the Bucks to win in a big way in the second half. But it was always, you know, if they loosen up just a little bit, if they take their foot off the accelerator, this is going to end up really close. And from the moment that Giannis was called for the tech, for staring down Horford, I was like let's just ignore the call. Tony Brothers saying that's a tech and like the right and wrong of that. But when it happens, I'm like, you don't want to be given any points away in this game. In
Horford
this
also like, said that moment got him going for whatever it's worth.
But yeah, I don't care about that because it got Giannis going too. Like Giannis absolutely destroyed him and the Celtics in the third quarter off the back of that moment. So I don't care about that. I'm sure Horford is going to say that, and I'm sure it's true. Like, he's not making it up. But it also got Giannis going. Like, it's not – those two guys delivered from that moment on over the course of the game. Like, I think that's fair to say. But that's a moment where I'm like, every point matters in this game. And then you think back to the times where guys aren't hitting shots, aren't taking shots they should be taking. Simple looks that aren't being finished. There were spells in this game where the Bucks looked pretty dominant on the glass, and there were times where they looked completely lost and they weren't getting anything.
The one Grayson missed that Tatum got and put back absolutely killed me. I didn't want to see him play again after that.
Well, that was kind of the killer in the game too. Like, that's when it really was, you're like, okay, it's not just the Celtics have grabbed the lead here. It's like they've grabbed the lead and they're running away with it. So that's the concern, you know, that's all of the problems there. It's because even when you're creating quality shots, one guys have to make them, but first and foremost, like, you've got to take them. Like, and that is the one place where, again, I will cut Drew Holiday some slack, because I think the thing that I would be most disappointed in him and would be just, I like, the Bucks couldn't be in games if he was taking like 10 shots. If he was Eric Bledsoe in a real way.
I don't know.
Didn't occasionally chuck up 20.
I don't know if that might have been better in this game.
Where are the shots going? Like, Giannis had all that he could handle.
Well, you need to, I mean, I know easier said than done. You need Grayson shooting more. You need Bobby shooting more.
It wasn't happening tonight for Bobby, which
Bobby was shooting, just not the ones that we want.
Well, he wasn't even, like, seven shots in total, 7 shots in 15 minutes. like, by Bobby Portis standards, that's not exactly gunning. Like, Bobby is not shy.
In the first half, he was 1 for 6 in less than 12 minutes, which is pretty kind of gunning. But the problem is only one was a three, despite having all those open looks. So he's 1 for 5 from two. And again, talked about that second quarter where the Bucks could have taken a much bigger lead into that third quarter and built on it. They're leading by one because they lose Bobby's 11-44 by 10 points because he doesn't make any shots except for one and just is not that impactful.
Bobby still fascinates me. Like, in, I find him, the idea of him within the team, what he brings when he's at his best, how he hurts you when he's at his worst. Like, he really is kind of a swing player on this team. But even just the thought process that goes into that, the thought process that's going to go into it in the offseason for the Bucks, when you're going to be facing a big payday there. The thing I've always had is, like, Brook is the glue for the Bucks. Brook is the center. And the concern you have, and we got to see it play out in the regular season this year, is Brook's time is coming to an end. You know, he's getting on an age. We're seeing the health problems already. How do you replace that? Because he's so central to what the Bucks do that without Brook, you almost have to tear the whole script up and look at a whole bunch of different ways how you play. Bobby's not doing that. So then Bobby's got to be Bobby. And then when a game like this comes along and he's not able to deliver on that, that's just really disappointing. Like, and it's surprising too. I say that even as someone who at times has very openly doubted Bobby Portis. This is not what I ever expect the issue to be with Bobby, that he's going to get quality looks in the corners and he's not going to take them. That's weird. And as I said, not just this game, not just this series, there are instances of it against the Bulls even. So I don't know what that's about. He had a great shooting season again. He's been great shooting with the Bucks. Like, got to let it fly.
Yeah, otherwise you turn into a fake shooter, and we know the Bucks do not do well with those. Bobby Portis in the regular season took 4.7 threes per game. In the playoffs, he's taking 4.8 per game, but that's before this one. I do wonder how many of those are from the Bulls series and not the Celtics series. I don't know. I'm just bummed. It was really a winnable game, and the fact that they could have been up 3-1 over the Celtics without Chris Middleton, and, you know, as you said earlier, all but punch the ticket to the next round where you can hopefully get Chris back, to now go into this place where, could they win the series? Sure, they could. It's a tied series. Anyone could win. You know, I shouldn't ask if they're going to be favored to that. They've never been favored even when they were up 2-1 or 1-0. But
I don't know. They were favored today.
I keep looking at Ringer. I need to stop doing that. Yeah, but
why? I don't know why for this series in particular.
It gets me better tweet content. It's probably going to be 99% Celtics at the Ringer after this game. But
probably.
I don't know. I just don't feel great. I just feel like the holes keep showing. And it's just going to be tough.
It's the best of three series. You've got to go play two games in the Garden. There's not a reason to feel great about it. Like,
yeah,
TD Garden is going to be madhouse. We'll see how the officiating breaks go with that. My overall thing on that is I do not think the officiating has been anywhere near as bad in this series as everyone makes out to be. And where it has been bad, I think it's kind of pretty evenly bad, like, which is pretty standard in the NBA.
I thought game three was abysmal overall. The rest of the series has been okay.
It wasn't good, but I don't care. I don't know why everyone else cares so much. Just play the game. Go and win the game on the court. It's like the refs are out of your control.
Like,
the Celtics are spending so much time on it. That will be the thing that will really annoy me if they lose the series is, like, I've never seen a team, a coaching staff to just cry, to just moan constantly. It's like, go try and beat the Bucks on the court. And honestly, what it was feeling like is they didn't think they could do that in a regular way, which, you know, Boston Celtics, maybe I shouldn't tell them this. You absolutely can. Like, you can have the whistle go against you and you have good enough players, and with the spot the Bucks are in, you can go and beat them. You don't need to spend all of your energy on the officials. But I don't know. It didn't even work for them tonight. Like, I think all of that backfired against them. It backfired against them with the crew they got. They weren't getting any better calls throughout the game. Although, as I said earlier, I don't know if they were necessarily looking for them because they were just fouling, like just dead on, no debate, fouls relentlessly throughout much of the game. But
yeah,
we'll see how that, we'll see how it pans out in Boston, because that is an obvious concern. And if you're the Bucks, I don't want to say, look, you never say the Bucks are ever out of anything or have to win a game, because if it goes this way, they won't. But you'd really, really like to get game 5.
Yeah, I mean, you really would like to get this one, because they did get a good whistle. Sure, this one's gone, in this game. No, I know, but I'm saying that the umpteenth reason you'd really want to get this one, but they did get a good whistle.
I think the way the two teams play is also going to dictate the whistle. There's only so much room that a whistle can go one way or another. Like, is something like the end of game 3 where the Bucks don't have a free throw in the final, what was it, 11 minutes something? Like, is that weird? Yes. That was in Milwaukee. Like, I don't think that can be something that they can preoccupy themselves with. I personally, maybe you disagree, maybe the Bucks themselves disagree. I think we only get John Horst picking up the phone, so his view on officiating goes is printed on The Athletic and everyone gets to hear about it because of all the Celtics are doing. And it's essentially, we're not going to let them control this narrative by themselves.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to give room for them to influence it. It's got to be something where both sides are complaining, both sides are having their say on it. Just got to go and play the game. And for the Bucks, got to make some shots. You know, if the hot shooting game comes in game 5, no one's really going to care about anything else. And the Bucks are going to be in a great, great spot to win the series still. But window is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And that is your point where, yes, this hurts, but this has happened. You got to move on. Like, it's done. The Bucks can still beat the Celtics 2 out of 3 times without a doubt. No problem to them. Even without Chris, just got to go and do it. Like, it's as simple as that. And that comes down to the kind of things we don't talk about very often because it's not interesting and it's kind of sounds like empty analysis. Guys have got to make shots. Guys have got to play better. Bobby Portis got to play better. Grayson Allen got to play better. Drew Holiday got to play better. If that doesn't happen, Bucks are going to lose the series. And honestly, at the end of it, it's going to be one big shrug. It's going to be, yeah, that wasn't good. It sucks they went out like that, because in spite of Chris's injury, things were there for them. Chance there to go and win another championship. Get to another finals. If those guys don't deliver, though, you're not going to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be an interesting offseason if it plays out that way. The last thing. And I'm an idiot, because if they went and got stopped in game 5, I would still believe. I know I'm an idiot. It's because of the Nets series.
You wouldn't be an idiot. You wouldn't be. They'd have a game at home to tie the series up, and then you've got one game, winner advances, and you've got the best player on the court. Like, I don't think you'd be an idiot.
How are they trading for Al Horford?
Al Horford was not the leading scorer in this game, by the way.
I did joke
about it because I had a tweet, which I'm sure by the time I get off this pod and look at it, Celtic fans are probably all over, where I tweeted about, I hope everyone's enjoying the Giannis era, and that the Celtics were getting absolutely owned. And within 5 minutes, I decided to quote tweet it with, I hope everyone is enjoying the Al Horford era. The Bucks are getting absolutely owned.
That's good.
So
I say I'm an idiot just because I just feel like they... Well, you know, we talked about before they turned around the Bulls series that they just have not played like 4 complete quarters. And it's kind of been similar in this series. Again, you don't want to take all the credit away from Boston, but the Bucks just have these long several-minute lapses. And I think it usually starts offensively, and they just lose the rope and either let the Boston build a lead or give up their lead. And it's just the cadence of the series has been frustrating. Like, there's these elating third quarters, and it's like, oh my God. I remember I was like, oh, I think they'll probably need to steal a minute or two without Giannis. Can you stay alive in that minute? Because otherwise, you got Giannis, you'll be fine. And they're just like, yeah, we have Giannis, and we're just going to give up the lead immediately anyway. It's just like, how?
So much what you're describing there. It was just like what happened last year, too.
I know.
Like,
I know.
That's the thing. I just, I I'm not saying I don't get the frustration when they lose a game like this, but it's the same way they won a championship last year. And it's something that Bucks fans really, if they're not already, on the same page, if they haven't come to terms with it for their own physical and mental health,
it's not possible.
It's a good idea to just recognize this is how the Bucks do it. Whether they're going to win or they're going to lose, playoff Bucks basketball looks like this. Like, that's how it is. Maybe it's someday, some point, someday, it can be different. No. Right now, it's not. This is how it looks. This is how it feels. They managed to come through that last year. Is everything about that repeatable? Is it sustainable to try and win games this year? Is it a good idea to do this?
No.
No. But it doesn't mean that they won't do it again. Like, it's definitely possible. But that, to me, it's like, you get a game like this, it's the reason I'm not, like, on the floor. And at no point, other than maybe when Chris's injury happens, have I been down like I would have been on multiple occasions in last year's postseason. Because we know what the journey can look like for this team. And everything they do always suggests it's going to be ugly. It's not going to be easy. They're going to do some dumb things. They're going to shoot themselves in the foot. But often, they just still find a way to come through it. So that's kind of, and I'm not like overly optimistic. I'm not trying to put something there to like send everyone home happy. I do think that's the case for the Bucks. They could run out of luck on that in this series. 100% possible. But I don't think if they lose game five, it's like, oh, it's a wrap. Do I know like 50 people on Twitter and in the Discord who will be saying that or are already saying that?
No, it's been
for
said.
Sure. For sure. That I can't say for certain because I'm not looking. I'll take a couple of days. So I only check out the Brewers channel on our Discord. And although I'm not checking that out tonight either.
Woody not getting it done either. Drew Holiday-esque.
It's, well, possibly even worse. We will not talk about giving up 10 runs to the Cincinnati Reds tonight. But it's just, this is who this team is, for better and for worse. And we've already seen what the better looks like. So I'm prepared to stick with them through inevitable torture, regardless of what the outcome may be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they literally broke Rohan's brain. It's done. Doesn't work anymore. Feel better soon. Rohan's dealing with some migraines, I think. But he tweeted that, so I don't think I'm pulling an Adam Schefter and violating HIPAA.
Can you say that with HIPAA?
I'm even less of a doctor than he is. Last thing, I will take my apology on saying Jeff would be a better hang than Stan Van Gundy. Stan was...
is one of the worst broadcasts I've ever seen. I'm just trying to think. Jeff is not like I still think Stan might be a better hang.
Now, if when Horford elbowed Antetokounmpo in the face and only gave up one free throw? That's a great trade. What?
If the question was, would I rather listen to Jeff's commentary or Stan's? At the time, I would have also fought for Stan, and I would apologize on that.
Yeah,
I still think Stan could be a better hang.
Fair,
but
I miss Jeff on the call. Does he still do games? Have we just not gotten him?
We're just on TNT all series, and it's the same again. I'm sure it's Stan and BA on Wednesday. Is it?
Yeah, it's every other day now.
Well, I know Brian Anderson said up top that Game 5 would be on TNT as well. So I'm going to guess we're going to get some more Stan.
Stan just wants it to be UFC. Twitter...
There was so much wild stuff he said, as in some wildly inaccurate stuff, which during the regular season, I didn't feel like that was a thing. I know a lot of people have been praising Stan too for his attention to detail. I don't know, has that gone away with the playoffs somewhat, which would be a weird thing too, because you've got two teams in a series. Like, if that's your series,
yeah,
and you're seeing them over and over, but some pretty outlandish stuff, let alone commentary on some of the fouls and some of the physicality.
The Bucks don't generate turnovers, hit at one point, and I was like, that doesn't sound super accurate.
The one that got me was either it was first or second quarter. It was definitely first half when Marcus Smart flops and gets the call, and he's like, anyone calling that a flop? you know, they have no idea what it feels like. You know, Giannis's strength. I was like, what? You're an NBA coach. You know the rules of the game. The rule is not if the other guy's stronger, you get the ball. Like, it just makes no sense whatsoever. Stan was terrible, but I think he's a better hang than Jeff still.
I'm not.
Give me one more game, though, and I could change my mind on that. I don't want to listen to commentate, but
celebrating the elbow, just I just didn't get it, and I wasn't like up and
on. I got his point, but it was a dumb thing to say.
He was so happy.
What he needed to say is, you know, Horford got his money's worth out of it. Is really what he was. You know, if they're both gonna get a technical, Horford was the one who he got value out of it, which is what he was trying to say, but he bungled that even. In a way that just, yeah, made him seem pretty bloodthirsty.
Well, he did that because he was rooting for the Celtics, and he was if
why Bobby is he rooting Portis, for the Celtics though? I'm not no disputing idea. That he is, but I don't like. There's lots of people rooting for the Celtics. We know this.
Is it because the Bucks just don't talk to anyone, so none of the media actually like them?
They're like, if Bud's not going to tell us the starting lineup, we're just going to root for the Celtics.
Or just instead. You know, they do those little interviews to like give them like color, like for the like, I don't know, football, maybe basketball doesn't do it as much.
I don't see as many of them on TNT. Generally.
Well, no, not even showing them, but sometimes they'll just like chat with the teams, right, and like get some info. They don't record it; it's just for background. MA is probably, you know, oh, this that, ha ha ha. Those shots are always going to be there for Al Horford. Our guys need to flop more, and then. Oh, Bud, what are you guys working on? Don't worry about it. Playing basketball, 5-on-5. Who are you starting? You'll see. I'm just not going to tell you.
They want the John Horst call instead. They want the John Horst is giving exclusives on his... Maybe. I mean, I don't know. It's also, I don't feel it's the crew for that. Maybe Stan is trying to balance it out. He's like, hey, Brian Anderson, like, that's a real Milwaukee guy here. I've got to be the Celtics guy, which doesn't work like that because BA's a pro, you know. He's
plays it straight. Play. Just loves good ball in every sport.
Yeah. I think we're going to get more Stan on Wednesday, so we can revisit that then. Hopefully the game has gone away where we don't even have to talk with Stan on Wednesday's pod.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see also what he says. It could be the greatest game ever. We might have to bring him up, but... Do you have anything else?
One thing. I'm not saying it's going to happen because I've been the person who has believed it essentially wouldn't happen all along. We're getting deep in this series. This series could go all the way. It's not impossible that Chris comes back before this is over. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. Could be a very bad decision. But like it's something that we actually can take Bud at his word on. Not that he said anything for sure, but he was asked would he play Game 3 or Game 4. He definitively said no. And there was more of a hedge when it was asked if we would see him before the end of the series.
I always thought it would be Game 6 or nothing. So like you said, in that Game 5 win, I actually was thinking after Game 3, if you split 4 and 5 and Chris comes back for Game 6 and is somehow able to play well and you win, that would be a very Bucks storybook-esque thing. I didn't factor in that it would be the most Bucks thing if they lost home court in devastating fashion first, which of course it is. But steal one more in Boston, bring Chris back, hits a couple threes, couple stops. It would be pretty nice. I'm not going to obviously bank on that, but I would certainly take it at this point.
I mean, the other thing with the swings of this series, I think it's interesting to look at the other series in the East. For momentum swings and compare the two things and how they feel. Like, this is legitimately, you just say, okay, it's best of three, and you kind of forget about what's gone before. Because where we came out of after stealing Game 1, series comes back to Milwaukee, and we're like, look, could have been worse. They've taken home court, they've split. It's kind of the same here, too. It's like, yeah, the opportunity was there, Celtics got it back. I don't know. It's not something that I think tomorrow Bucks fans will feel differently about it than they likely do right now. If not tomorrow, maybe by Wednesday morning. Like the series is still right there, and it's in a spot that if at the start of the series you'd said to Bucks fans, it's going to be 2-2 going into Game 5. Do you think the Bucks will win the series? I think most Bucks fans would say the Bucks will win the series. And like that's kind of the spot where it still applies. And I also don't think on anything we're seeing on the court, there's reason to say, oh no, the Celtics are definitely going to win it. Like, the Celtics are having to come up with some crazy stuff and finding it really, really difficult to get a game like this. The one thing is just the Bucks not putting the games away where they are. I'm not even talking about losing tonight. I just mean even game three. It's like games that at other times, and I guess it is when Chris is there and you've got one other like true legitimate score, games where you're in control, you put it to bed and it's like you're up 15 to 20 points. We can get like plenty of minutes from Luka Vildoza and you're cruising on to the next game. That is the issue, because if you're going to let the Celtics hang around every game, you're just going to lose some by way of them being close too. Like, that is something for when we pinpoint all the things that went wrong tonight. It's also just what can happen. Like, if you stay within, don't know if you ever heard, it's a game of runs, Ty. And if you stay within range of one of those runs, you can get caught the wrong side of it. And tonight the Bucks should have been out of reach from one run, bringing it back to a tie game. They weren't. So when that happens, then you're susceptible to the whole thing falling apart as it did.
But I do think, and I know we're 70 minutes into this brutal loss podcast. Just some of the bench stuff I said earlier, and just Drew as a whole item, which I think we're well aware. The other concern is, you know, this Horford thing, as much as we wanted to just call it the Horford game in game three. And, you know, do I think he's going to play this well again? Yes, because I don't want to jinx it. Okay, yes, I good. Do. However,
I was being accused of saying that he wouldn't. I was like, that wasn't me saying that about Al. I was thought, well, it was either you or Ty. And I said, well, let's blame Ty then.
That's what happens on these podcasts.
Can you confirm that you did? It sounds like
I said it first. I think you agreed with me pretty heartily, though. But I do think
we'll check tape.
Covering him is a problem for the Bucks, just because
sure. The
Lopez thing is not super comfortable with it. Giannis has not done great. And again, it's like Bobby just – that should be
– Bobby should be able to.
That should be the Bobby spot. And I do think you probably need to try it again in game five. I don't think you can just go away from him yet. They just don't have enough options.
But why did Bobby get hooked tonight?
Offense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Bobby out there defensively, maybe you could have actually done something with some of those possessions. He could not score. He was terrible. Like, he wasn't taking the shots that he needs to take. Like, that's the scary thing there. Now, I would like to think that won't happen again, because it's just not really in Bobby's character. It's not the way he approaches the game. But that was the problem. Like, Bobby getting hooked for offense is just disastrous. I would never have seen that one coming. But maybe he still can for defense take some of those Al Horford positions.
Well, I think, you know, if Bobby Portis wants to cement his status on the Bucks, his minutes in the rotation, and, you know, that contract that we've talked about for so long that's presumably awaiting in free agency, fixing that stuff and having a big game five and helping the Bucks win would do it right there. The easiest way to erase a bad playoff game is to come out and make up for it the next time. So certainly not over. Big Bobby game, better Drew game, and game five is going to be eminently winnable. They just have to go do it, as is always the case with the Giannis-era Bucks.
Yeah, Bobby can stay for basically as long as he wants on a very healthy contract if he shows up for two of the next three games.
Yeah, agreed. Same with Grayson? I mean,
Grayson's
he's already signed
for a while
the deal.
Anyway. Huh? He's here for a while anyway. Like,
deal for a while anyway. We'll see if he's here or not.
But like right now, and we know how decisions like these are made, we know how when there's a squeeze, things will factor in. If you're Bobby, like, Pat's leader in the clubhouse, if it's one into two, Pat's the guy right now that you'd be like, oh, well, he played better. He's probably actually more consistent. You can rely on him being able to be on the floor in the playoffs more than you can rely on Bobby, even if Bobby is the higher variance guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We'll have whole podcasts.
I was going to say, I can't even
no,
do this.
No, we will have whole podcasts devoted to that. So I don't even know what way I come down just yet on, well, who would I go to? But if you're Bobby and you really want to stay in Milwaukee, which it would seem like he really does, and you also want to get paid, like, those things are real. Those things are real. They're in front of your eyes. And I doubt he's oblivious. It wouldn't be his focus, but I doubt he's oblivious to it. So go earn your deal. Like, go earn your deal. And I think, unlike PJ Tucker a year ago, you will get paid even if it's at a major cost if you do what's there to be done. which is be Bobby Portis. Like, be the guy that not only have you been with the Bucks, but even the guy you've been before you were with the Bucks in an offensive sense. That's kind of what's needed from him right now.
Need him to be Bobby Biatch.
Sure, Ty.
Thought that line would land better. Well, alas, I'm out of stuff. Are we good here?
Yeah, we're definitely good.
I'm sad, but I do think you nailed it. At least by Wednesday morning, I'm going to be optimistic again. Drunk on Bucks basketball forever. Usually Rohan does the outros. Feel better, Rohan. But yeah.
Do you manage?
I can manage. I got it. I'm going full Drew Holiday. Clear out. I got this. I'll get somewhere. I'll take a shot. We'll see if it lands. Subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, wherever you're listening, please, if you have not already. Apple or Spotify, the two most popular, but the Eurostep Podcast Network is available all over, including YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, hello, you're the fabled 18% or whatever, if you've made it this far. Appreciate you even more. Please also subscribe on YouTube. Just subscribe both places. Wherever you listen, it really does mean a lot to us. It's totally free. So subscribe on YouTube and your podcast platform of choice. Leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify and send it to us to get in the Eurostep Podcast Network Discord. And you can get your review read on air if you want to leave that and send it to us. Merch, gspnstore.com. Buy the merch. Neither of us are wearing it tonight. Probably because we've taken some L's in the merch. We wanted to make sure it wasn't the merch. It's not the merch.
No, don't even put that out there. It's just been disproven. I wasn't wearing it. I would have put some on if maybe there was more joyous, you know.
Yeah.
If it was a more joyous occasion, I would have reached for a win in six sweatshirt. But look, we know.
It's not the merch. It's proven not to be.
Views are probably going to be down a little for this one. I was like, let's not waste the merch on the loss. We'll save it for Wednesday.
Yeah. Winning Wednesday, merch Wednesday. Caught the merch, gspnstore.com. Adam setting that up, done a great job with it. And that's pretty much it. So, and follow us all on Twitter. Our ads are on the screen at Ty Windish, at Adam McGee 11, at Eurostep Podcast, at Winning Numeral 6 Podcast. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. Pod Random. We will talk to you on Wednesday.